T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Dan Bernstein with you on Sports Radio 670 WSCR The Score. And joining us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park, is Sam Acho. You can follow the former Bears linebacker on Twitter at TheSamAcho. He's the author of Let the World See You, How to Be Real in a World Full of Fakes. Sam, it's funny. Well, it's not funny, ha-ha, but last time you were on these airwaves and we were talking about the NFL and we were talking about the Rooney Rule and talking about such things as subconscious bias and implicit bias training and all of that. And little did we know that our discussion could become something like this. I'm glad you're joining us again today. So how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I'm really glad to be back on.
What are you thinking about today? When you wake up and we look around and we see people cleaning up and digging out, what's top of mind for you?
Top of mind for me, it's funny. Yesterday was Sunday, and I got a chance to hear the church I grew up going to is a church called Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship, and a guy named Tony Evans is the pastor. And I got a chance to hear on Instagram Live, his doc got a chance just to share a message from him, just providing a ton of clarity to what's going on. And here's the message that I heard. It was twofold. Number one, racism does exist in America, but not every white person is racist. And the other side does hold true as well, that yes, there are evil people in the world who do wrong things, but for people who had that biased mentality, not every black person is a thief or a robber or a thug. And so it just came back to this idea of judging people by the content of their character rather than the color of their skin. And that's kind of what I'm really feeling. You see the outrage coming out through rioting and through the anger that people have. And you wonder, man, where does it come from? You look back at the years and years of oppression that African-Americans have faced in America, and years of not being heard. And I think the benefit that we see now is that now finally it seems as if people are listening.
I laughed when the NFL came out with their statement. However, I thought it was too late and hypocritical for the NFL to now try to plant their flag on the right side of this after all that was done to twist Colin Kaepernick's protest into something it wasn't. I just it rankled me. I'm wondering how you felt with of all leagues, the NFL dealing ahead as they did with someone who was trying to shine a light on exactly this issue.
Yeah, well, it wasn't just the NFL, if we'll remember correctly. It was also a large number of the American people, specifically a large number of white people, not all white people, but a large number of American people said, well, hey, Colin, that's not the right way to protest. Not the correct protest during a football game or during the national anthem, the singing of the national anthem. That's not the right way to protest. Although, our U.S. military fought for these freedoms to peacefully protest people, not only the NFL, but also a large number of Americans, people who we saw burning Kaepernick jerseys and doing things of that sort. They also disagreed with the way he protested. And so I think the bigger issue is that if somebody's someone who's being oppressed or representing people who have no voice, who are being oppressed and is protesting, they're protesting for a reason. So you can't tell them how they should and shouldn't protest. And that's not only the NFL, that's anybody. I think that anybody who is more angry about the riots than they are about the murders of George Floyd or Ahmaud Arbery, that's pointing more to the issue that we have. You aren't angry about these two African-Americans who died, and the list goes on and on with Philando Castile and so on and so forth. But you aren't angry about their deaths. More so, you're angry about how people are responding to those deaths. I think that just reaches the core of the issue, is that we need to love one another, not judge one another. There's a lot of judgment going on intrinsically. We talked about it unconsciously, where people, without saying it, they feel, I don't feel safe. We saw it with Amy Cooper in New York. She said, completely made up scenario, right? She said, like, when I say made up, it wasn't true what she said, but she saw an African-American. Amy Cooper illegally had her dog off of the leash in the park. This African-American man who was birdwatching said, excuse me, ma'am, would you please put your dog on the leash? She was offended, and she said, you know what? I'm going to use my power, for lack of better terms, my privilege, and I'm going to trap you. I'm going to do a gotcha. And here's what she said. She said, hey, I'm going to call the police and tell them that an African-American male is here, and I am in fear for my life. And she knew that those words, that combination of words, would be a death sentence for him, for lack of better terms. Or better yet, she knew that she would somehow win that argument. And so I think that specific example, then the world seeing it, everyone being quarantined, the world seeing what happens on a day-to-day basis for African-American male, I think that really shined the light on the issue that we have, and that's why we're seeing a lot of these riots and protests now.
How do we make this matter in the right way? This is what I keep dealing with. Sam, these things happen, and we go through the motions of some of these news cycles where our nerves are raw, the emotions are raw, and then we clean up, and then everything gets right back to making things comfortable when we shouldn't be comfortable about this. It's the discomfort that will bring needed change. I struggle with trying to figure out what the concrete steps are to save the next life.
Yeah, well, it's funny. Everyone's been waiting to get back to normal, and things aren't going to go back to normal, whether not all corona, but also because the racial tension in America is coming to the forefront. Things are not going back to normal. And so here's what you can do as an everyday white guy, black guy, who as an everyday person who does, you didn't really care, you want things to go back to normal, here's what you do. Number one, get educated. Get educated on the history of America. I went to the number one private school in the United States, St. Mark's School of Texas. It's predominantly an all-white school. I was there from the second grade till graduation. And during my time at this best school in the nation, I learned about American history, but I hardly learned about American history through an African-American lens. The only black heroes I heard about were Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King, as if those were the only two. But before I went to that school, first and second grade, I went to a predominantly black school. And when I'm 5, 6, 7 years old, I'm learning about black heroes, people like Fritz Pollard, who was the first black coach in 1921 in the NFL, the first African-American head coach. I learned about him, learning about all these different black heroes. And so I just think that step one for not just the white person, because some white people really care, but some don't. But step one for the everyday Joe is to get educated. Number one, go. There's a couple books. One is called Divided by Faith. I highly recommend that book. That's one you can learn from. Another is called Jesus and the Disinherited, another book. Benjamin Watson wrote a book as well called Under Our Skin. Get educated. Learn about American history through an African-American lens so that you can get to step two, which is to empathize. Right, the reason that black people are hurting so much is not only because the consistent, unnecessary, uncalled for murders of black men in America, but also it seems as if white people still don't understand why black people are upset. That's kind of the issue. It's like, how can you still not get it? Years and years, hundreds of years of oppression, and people say, well, we signed a law, Emancipation Proclamation, everybody's free, but you don't look at the new laws that are put in place to keep black people down and enslaved. And so anyways, number one, get educated. Number two, empathize. And number three, get to know your neighbor. It's funny, the last couple of days, I've gotten a couple texts and calls from some of my friends who predominantly have been white saying, hey, man, I'm thinking about you. Hey, let me know how I can help. I didn't know this was that big of a deal. And it's great that they're reaching out. I'm very appreciative of it. But I think the issue would become if I'm your only black friend and we haven't talked in 10 years since college, people are texting me from college. That's an issue, right? Does that make, like, that's an issue. If I'm the only black guy you know, and we haven't talked in 5, 6 years, we haven't hung out since 2010, that's an issue. Get to know people who don't look like you. And I understand, here's kind of, I'll end on this. I understand that going out of these, our comfort zones can be a little bit scary, right? It's one of these things where it's like, well, what if he doesn't get my jokes? Or what if they don't really eat the same way or think the same way? That's the whole point of life. That's the benefit of life. Get a chance to know people who look different than you, who think differently than you, who act differently than you. That's the beauty of America. If we were in Australia or a different country, it might be different, but that's the beauty of America. We have tons of different people from different races. There's a great opportunity to get to know them.
You mentioned the educational differences, and it's interesting you bring that up because today, yesterday and today, is the 99th anniversary of the Tulsa Massacre, the single worst incident of racial violence in American history. And the question was being asked on Twitter, and I apologize for not knowing exactly who was doing the Twitter poll. The question was the Tulsa race massacre taught in any of your history classes in school? And I clicked on it, and I clicked no, and it was something like 96% of people responding on Twitter answered no. This was not, this took place in 1921, and the single worst racial incident of in this country's history was not taught. And I'm wondering how many other things are out there. And I mean, I knew about it, but it wasn't taught to me in school. So, like, what else don't I know?
Yeah, add me to that list. Never wasn't taught about it. That, and even I just think about like a guy like Emmett Till. I don't know if anyone remembers Emmett Till, who was wrongly accused, African American, falsely accused of flirting with a white woman. This is
of whistling, right? Of just catcalling or whistling.
Exactly, and this white woman lied about it. He didn't whistle. So first of all, before we even get to whether he whistled or not, the fact that he could be accused of that and that could cause these two white men to go and lynch and murder him and torture him, number one, that's an issue. Number two, he denied it, so it wasn't true. So it's like we're defending something that shouldn't even have to be defended. But number three, I go back to, wow, that was what, 60 years ago, 70 years ago? And we weren't taught about it in school. I wasn't taught about it. At the number one school in the United States, that's an issue. And so that's why Amy Cooper hurt so much. Because what Amy Cooper did was the exact same. Imagine if there was no video camera. Imagine if no one was recording. That was the same thing. People say, well, no, that was so long ago. No, it wasn't. I went to the National Museum of African American History and Culture in D.C., got a chance to really, once again, like I said, get a chance to view American history through an African-American lens. I got a chance to go to Minnesota back when the Super Bowl was being played there and sit down with a man by the name of Alan Page, who's NFL Hall of Famer. Who's
former,
also,
Bear.
Former Bear. Former Bear, former Viking. And he's also the first African-American state Supreme Court justice in the state of Minnesota. And while we were there, he had this collection of artifacts that talked about American history, but the history that oftentimes isn't talked about. I saw pictures of, I think one of them was from 1940 or 1950 something. I think it was 1964 of a pool. In the title of the picture, it said "Only on Thursdays," and the meaning behind that was at that time, this pool in California, African Americans could only swim in that pool on Thursdays because the pool got cleaned on Fridays. Just think about that. You were only allowed to swim on this pool on Thursdays because black people could only swim on Thursdays because they would come and clean the pool on Friday. There's pictures. There's another picture there. And these are real artifacts. There's a picture of young black babies, about 8 to 12 of them, in their diapers, you know, no more than a year old. And on the bottom of the picture, the title is Gator Bait. And so this is so. This is American history, and number one, we need to talk about it. We need to talk about it, and then admit our faults, and then find a way to reconcile. But if you keep on trying to put a Band-Aid over a large wound, it's never going to heal. Surgery needs to be done.
You bring up Emmett Till, and of course, he was a Chicagoan and is buried here in Burr Oak Cemetery, and he was actually visiting relatives in Mississippi, but born and raised in Chicago, so it's a story that perhaps is better known here. We're talking with Sam Acho, the former Bears linebacker, on Sports Radio 670 The Score. And when you go to a different city, and this is something that I have heard a lot of pro athletes talk about, depending on where they play, whether they're playing in Houston, Chicago, or New York, somewhere else, there's always a discussion that's had among black players about neighborhoods and about where it's maybe safer or less safe for you to be and for you to be driving a nice car, and where you're more or less likely perhaps to be pulled over for no apparent reason and have to deal with these charge situations. Tell us a little bit about some of those conversations that are had when somebody gets to a new city. Because I know they're had, and I've talked to guys about it. that there's always saying, hey, you know, this is a spot where you might just want to watch it because you're more likely to get a driving while black pullover situation there.
Yeah, well, it's not even, and I love that you said that when you go to different cities. Well, oftentimes it's the way a lot of African American people grew up. Like it's a well known fact that if you drive through a certain neighborhood through the wrong neighborhood, I'll put it that way, at the wrong time, and you are the wrong skin color, there's a chance that you will either get pulled over, you'll get a ticket, go to jail, or even worse, as we've seen in some situations, you could be dead. So, I have many examples of getting pulled over for no apparent reason besides being in a predominantly white neighborhood. I have many examples of getting harassed of situations where, you know, we saw what happened with Amy Cooper, similar situation. And the interesting thing is, it's not just me. Go ask any African-American. I would guess that 99, maybe 95, to be safe, percent of African-American males have gone through a situation like that. So that's the fabric of America. That's the world we live in. That's the agreement, the contract, lack of better terms, that was signed in this country. And we've been living and playing by those rules. But the problem arises when the people who are supposed to protect and serve, number one, not only them, but also people you're supposed to be living in contact with, and you know, your neighbors, are, for lack of a better term, lynching you. Now what? Now what do you want me to do? You want me to sit back and continue to wait till I'm the next one? Or do you want me to protest? And then you see the anger that comes out of that. Then also there's also talk about some of the riots. It's not just African Americans, right? It's people who are trying to co-opt the situation mm-hmm. for their benefit and for their good. And I think that's, whether it's well known or not, it's true. And so I just think that what people need to understand and see is that our history is our history, and it's almost like the rearview mirror. It's there, right? We need to address it. You cannot ignore it. But step two, like, there's a brighter future ahead. A lot of our parents grew up in a country that was highly, highly, strongly racially divided. And so when you grow up in that atmosphere, as a child, you see that and you learn from your parents. And so you almost have these thoughts of, well, I can't trust this person. As a white person, I can't, this black guy, I don't really know. Right? Or this black girl, I've never even spent time with, I don't even know how she thinks. And so that's an issue. But the solution is we can change. We can change the future of America. But it takes, once again, getting out of your comfort zone, say, you know what, mom, dad, I think you were wrong in the way you were thinking, right? This guy isn't what you said he was. I don't have to cross the other street if I see a black guy walking. I don't have to avoid him. I don't have to assume. I did an internship at Target 10 years ago during my college days. Did a store executive internship. And these same stereotypes that you would see, black guys in the store, man, I wonder if he's stealing or not or whatever. I found out that the most common thief in Target was a 35-year-old white woman.
Wow. Sam,
so it's like, how do you live with that? Yeah.
You've got a book out. It's called Let the World See You, How to Be Real in a World of Fakes. How do people find the book, and what's the theme?
Yeah, definitely. So the book can be found. You can find it wherever books are sold, Amazon, find Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. The book comes out in the fall, in October. And it's funny, the first chapter talks about these same issues. So I grew up going to an all-black school, even an all-black church, first, second grade, and then I went to this all-white school, but I was still going to that all-black church. So I grew up in Nigeria. My parents are from Nigeria, so I grew up with all these different perspectives that a lot of people don't see. I understand how a black person thinks about society, but also I understand how a white person thinks about and views society. And then also, coming from an immigrant family, I understand how immigrants view society. And so it talks about my first chapter, some of the first sentences in chapter one talk about this dynamic of growing up different and being able to understand different people's points of view. And I think that's why it's so critical now for people to just love, right? Be more accepting. Don't judge, right? Don't judge somebody by how they look. Judge them based on what they do and how they act, right? Judge a fruit, the fruit by the tree, right? And so judge a tree by its fruit. So anyways, the book talks about just how to be real and what it means to stop hiding. I think a lot of people hide, whether they're scared or hurt. And it talks about the benefits and joy that comes when you allow yourself to be seen. And so the book is called Let the World See You, Amazon. You can find it there. It comes out in the fall. Feel free to pre-order it or follow me on social media. on Facebook, Sam Macho is my Facebook page, at the Sam Macho on social media as well. I'll keep you posted there. But yeah, I think we're at a point in society where everything we're talking about, it's not going away. And so it's time for people to step up, right? Don't just text me. Find some other people who don't look like you and reach out to them. Get to know them. And I think we'll see a huge benefit there.
Sam Macho, thanks for all your time today. We really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
That's Sam Macho, the former Bears linebacker. I'm Dan Bernstein here live and local, 9 to noon, Monday through Friday on Sports Radio 670, The Score. And I mentioned when we started out that we're going to do the best we can to cover everything that's going on. I know there is stuff going on in sports with the NBA trying to stir back to life and the Major League Baseball exchanging proposals with the players. It does appear that there are ongoing conversations, even if they are uncomfortable and divisive. The fact that they're talking is still probably a good sign. And Jay Jaffe is scheduled to join us at 11 with the latest on what baseball's doing. But we're talking about everything now. And you've got to get to what Joe Lockhart wrote. He was a VP in the NFL, and he told some truths about what actually happened with Colin Kaepernick. We can compare and contrast that with what Roger Goodell said a couple of years ago and what the NFL is trying very cynically and unfortunately to do now, and trying to position themselves in a way that they shouldn't really be allowed to because of what they let happen, what they fomented, what they helped happen and are ongoing still doing regarding Colin Kaepernick and what he was trying to say about people of color dying at the hands of police. That's what he was talking about. That's all that he was talking about. And they drummed him out of the league. And now the NFL wants to say how much they support all these causes. I'm not buying it. But Joe Lockhart told us what was really going on. And maybe some of what he said is going to be actionable because he's admitting what happened and how he feels about it. We'll get to that next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Roger, what went into the decision to stage a workout for Colin Kaepernick? Who'd you talk with? Kind of how did it come about? And then what did you think of the end result?
I haven't thought about this in a few weeks. Listen, this was, as I've said to you before, about creating an opportunity, which Colin's representatives came out in early October, and we created that opportunity. It was a unique opportunity, a credible opportunity, and he chose not to take it. I understand that, and, you know, we've moved on here.
Oh, okay, that's real easy. Now we did something, and we had a thing, and now we've moved on, so now I don't have to talk about it anymore. That's Roger Goodell. But, of course, now the NFL understood that it needed to come out and say something and do something, and they spoke very disingenuously. He did. We should put a name on it. Roger Goodell wrote the statement and put his name on the statement, where it's kind of convenient. It's almost like none of that stuff with Colin Kaepernick happened based on what they're saying about who they support and what they care about. Well, pulling the curtain back was Joe Lockhart in an op-ed that he wrote over the weekend for CNN. And he leads it by saying, "When I was an executive in the National Football League a few years ago, our organization was consumed by the case of Colin Kaepernick, the quarterback whose silent kneeling protest against police brutality arguably led him to lose his NFL career and not be re-signed by any club. No teams wanted to sign a player, even one as talented as Kaepernick, whom they saw as controversial and therefore bad for business." And he says that, "I thought we'd all done a righteous job." He believes that the league did try to get teams to sign Kaepernick, try to persuade them to change their minds, sending owners and players around to lead a dialogue on race relations. And he said, "I thought we'd done a righteous job considering." And then Lockhart writes, "I was wrong. I think the teams were wrong for not signing him. Watching what's going on in Minnesota, I understand how badly wrong we were." Said, "I was the league's executive vice president in charge of communications and government affairs from 2016 to 2018. And he mentions everything else they deal with here with Ray Rice and domestic abuse and the Deflategate scandal. He says, but no issue challenged the league and its owners more than Kaepernick and his silent protest during the national anthem, which he started in the preseason of 2016. First time he did it, no one even noticed that he took a seat on the bench rather than stand. It was only in the second preseason game that an NFL Network reporter, an employee of the league, noticed it and reported the story. And once it broke, Kaepernick worked with a former Green Beret, Nate Boyer, to find a more acceptable way to protest. The national anthem kneel, or taking a knee, was born. And he chronicles the history of it and how the Players Coalition is grappling with it and the NFL grappled with it. And he mentions when the president called him a son of a bitch, get that son of a bitch off the field now, he's fired, in front of the roaring crowd there. And he said, over the next few months, owners and players worked together to put a program in place to address the concerns raised so publicly by Kaepernick, but shared by hundreds of players. What didn't happen in any of this time of progress was a new team for Kaepernick. He worked out with several. Nobody wanted to sign someone with his obvious talents, even if the consensus was he'd be a high-quality backup. Kaepernick was not blocked because the league wanted to punish him for setting off the protests. But for many owners, it came back to the same thing. Signing Kaepernick was bad for business. An executive from one team that considered signing Kaepernick told me the team projected losing 20% of their season ticket holders if they did. It was a business risk that no team was willing to take. He said, I told myself we were righteous in doing the hard work of making progress. I was mistaken. He said, I'm a product of white privilege and all that goes with that. I've never been stopped by a police officer and hassled or arrested because of the color of my skin. I can't begin to know how it feels. But during my time in the league, I did get an education. So I'll never forget one day back then sitting in a meeting discussing these issues with everyone going back and forth when Hall of Famer Curtis Martin said he had something to say. Curtis is soft-spoken, incredibly smart. Calmly, he told a story about going to look for a new house in a neighborhood on Long Island with his wife and being stopped by the police. He was a star player with the New York Jets, but the police treated him, like some treat all blacks, as a danger to the community. So the story made a huge impression on me. I saw Curtis as a role model for communities, yet he lived in a world where, despite his enormous talent and skill, his many good works and successes, he was seen as a threat. And it continues to, Lockhart discusses why Kaepernick should have a job. And he makes the point that maybe the right team to sign him now would be the Vikings. And I go back and forth thinking about how that's going to look and what that's going to mean, if and when and how that happens. And would it be real? Would it be empty? What's really going on? And the answer is, I don't know. I'd love for him to get a chance if he wants it. I don't know if he does. I don't know if Kaepernick still is looking to continue his career. But man, for the league to have, and he doesn't say it outright, Lockhart doesn't. If we're going to get all over our retroactive reassessment of Michael Jordan's statement about shoes, think about what the owners really did. What that owner's saying to him is at 20%. What he's saying is, and as they allowed everybody to misinterpret Colin Kaepernick's statement, all he was protesting was bad cops killing black people. Black people losing their lives. Innocent black people, unarmed black people being killed by cops. It had nothing to do with the troops. It had nothing to do with the military, with the country, with anything that it was conflated to be. And football let it happen. All the owners let it happen. What they did was they basically told you, let's put it in those terms that we talked about from The Last Dance. Racists buy tickets too. What they did and why it pissed me off that the NFL would now come out and say, oh, we support this, and we are on the right side of this, as they try to plant their brand flag when they put a finger to the wind and see where that's going. They said, racists buy tickets too. And they capitulated to the very, very worst, darkest aspects of their fandom. They did that. And now they want us to think they didn't. They want that to unhappen. But they told us, through their actions, they told us, racists buy tickets too. And that's why when when they try to position themselves as being on the right side of all this stuff. No, no, I'm not letting that happen. There's going to be more statements from teams, from coaches, from players. And I want to hear from some of these college coaches too. And there have been some terrific things that have been said. You know what's real. You know who's being real and you know who isn't when it comes down to some of this stuff. You can sense it. You know. When Stan Van Gundy writes what he writes, when Steve Kerr writes what he writes, Doc Rivers, that's good stuff. And unless in the statement there is actually something about the police killing black people, then otherwise it's just a one of these mealy-mouthed brand statements that's put out. And that's all it is. Well, I care about this. Now this is me saying that I'm caring about something. Unless there's a specific mention of what actually happened. And by the way, the New York Times has, I want to say it's like an 8-minute video that they have put together of the Floyd murder that you should watch. And if you haven't watched it, watch it. If you have watched it, watch it again. Because it's all right there. Everything is right in front of you. Everything is absolutely in front of you. And it's put together with footage that was able to rewind it back a little further than just some of the initial footage was. But they have it. And they've got all four of these guys who should all be prosecuted. Go back and watch it. But there are so many different statements coming out. I want to know, where's Dabo Swinney? Has he said anything? Where's Nick Saban? Where are some of these guys who sit in living rooms with black families and talk about what they're going to do to support and talk about their football program family or brotherhood or however they want to describe it, that they are in a home and talk about how they're going to protect while they're making millions and millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars off of that kid's free labor. So you know it. You can sense when one of these statements is real. Jack Flaherty, we started the show reading that from Jack Flaherty. Take some guts knowing that you're going to stand there in St. Louis, of all places. Lucas Giolito of the White Sox. That's a statement. That's real. There is a Twitter handle, a guy named Chris Franklin, who is at Campster, who put something out, a piece of satire that is absolutely brilliant. So good, like most great satire, just so good it hurts. And it has the bracketed sort of parenthetical term brand with a little trademark there. And it says, we at Brand are committed to fighting injustice by posting images to Twitter that express our commitment to fighting injustice. To that end, we offer this solemn white-on-black JPEG that expresses vague solidarity with the black community, but will quietly elide the specifics of what is wrong, what needs to change, or in what ways we will do anything about it. This is doubly true if Brand is particularly guilty of exacerbating these issues. We hope this action encourages you to view Brand positively without, you know, expecting anything from us. Ouch. Ouch. That puts it right there. Absolutely bang on. I mentioned the statement from White Sox ace Lucas Giolito. If you haven't heard it, I'll have it for you in its entirety. It's another example of the right way to do some of the stuff the best we can. I'm Dan Bernstein. You feel like talking? We're here. That's what we're doing today. 312-644-6767. You have the score. This segment is brought to you by Grand Appliance and TV. Grand Appliance is committed to serving Chicagoland during these unprecedented times with industry-leading delivery and in-store safety measures, Memorial Day sale pricing, and an extra 5% back on most appliance purchases. Shop grandappliance.com for offer details. Grand Appliance, trusted since 1930. Earlier, we read the statement that Jack Flaherty of the St. Louis Cardinals put out. It was 4 pages on Twitter. And Lucas Giolito is Jack Flaherty's high school teammate. I want to say Max Fried was also on that high school team, the Braves left-hander. And Giolito wrote, I don't know what it is to grow up black in the USA because it was not my experience. I do know that my parents never had to worry about me being pulled over and maybe never making it home. It's time to do better. It's time for true equality and justice for all Americans. In fact, it's way overdue. Stop turning a blind eye. Stop refusing to talk about it because it's uncomfortable. Complacency will only allow the scourge of racism to survive. It's been 400 years. Enough is enough. Black men and women like Trayvon Martin, Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, and Breonna Taylor will continue to die on the streets and in their homes if we don't stand alongside of them, echoing their voices loud and clear, and demand real change and accountability. He says, that's why I'm joining at Color of Change. Please join me and let your voice be heard. Hashtag Black Lives Matter. And I do think this is different this time around, that there are people, there are significant white people who are lending their voices to this chorus, who are saying that they are speaking up. And that does matter. It's important for that to happen. It's also important sometimes for white people to shut up and listen. And I think this is it's hard for those of us who talk for a living, because if those of us who sit here and have to keep the meters moving, and it's not about what we think or how we're trying to understand. You can't emphasize enough the significance of empathizing, of reaching out a little bit and thinking that if that were my kid and his neck or her neck under that same knee, saying I can't breathe, and watching some of this go down. And I've been shaken by a lot of the images of our paramilitary police forces, and we don't need this. We don't need it. It's police shouldn't want to look scary. And this isn't RoboCop. We have programs in place that have, for years, funneled leftover military equipment to police forces. And they're not occupying military units. And I saw several juxtapositions of the images of the people who are shooting reporters with rubber bullets and attacking reporters, credentialed reporters, national television photographers holding their cameras being beaten with nightsticks, juxtaposed with the way our healthcare workers on the front lines have had to cover themselves in hefty bags. And we have to find a way to demilitarize our police forces. And I know that there were issues in Minneapolis with so-called warrior training, that the police union went out of their way to, even though the mayor didn't want the police forces to undergo military-style training, the police unions made sure that they did. But that's an issue. There is a time and a place for certain levels of stepped-up protection for police and shields and riot control. I understand that. But the full-blown high-tech call of duty stuff that we're seeing go on, it doesn't feel like police. It feels like some kind of occupying army. And I think there's got to be some way to figure out what's right and what's needed and what it means to serve and protect, because these are the conversations that I do think we need to have. And I wish I understood where the rubber meets the road on some of this. And it's going to be the same things. It's going to be blue ribbon commissions, and it's going to be representative panels, and it's going to be symposia. But a lot of it on a grassroots level for all of us has to do with what we don't know about ourselves, what we don't know. And that's implicit bias. And that's the way our brains are hardwired to respond, or culturally wired, maybe not hardwired is the wrong word, but softwired over time to respond to people who look different. I don't know about, and I'm not a psychologist and I can't tell you about it, but I know there are experts in that who can help us in some regard, knowing what we don't know about how we react. And we're talking about police today because that's the issue in front of us, But when Jason Goff was on, he mentioned it's not just that. It's understanding some of these psychological subconscious biases and implicit biases everywhere. It's not that easy to just point somebody out and say, well, that person is thinking along racial lines, or that person is prejudiced, that person is biased. Some of this we don't know, and it takes some effort to find out. John from Shorewood is next up. He's on the Score. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Are you okay?
Good. I'm hanging in there, man. I just wanted to make a statement. You know, when I was watching that unfortunate video, I just kept thinking, you know, if one of those cops could have just demonstrated one ounce of humanity, just one, you know, just turn around and say, hey, partner, we got him. He's good. Stop that. You know, I just kept thinking, man, that might have stopped all of this. I mean, this was being filmed, like maybe how something like that could have possibly contributed to the healing that's needed. But then I have to check myself and I go, you're asking for a demonstration of humanity from those who may not see you as human. You know, when you're seen as no more than a cockroach, well, think about what you do when you see a cockroach. You want to squash it. So I kept having this thought, like, man, if someone would have just demonstrated some humanity, this might have been different. But then I had to check myself and I go, it's hard to do that when you don't see somebody as humans. And that's kind of where that's one of the, there are many places to start with this, but that's one of the places it starts. If you're not seen as human, you can't expect humanity. And thanks for giving me a platform to say that.
Always here for you, John. Appreciate it, as I always do. Thank you for calling in. There is a statement here that also should be read as we're looking at these various statements. The Washington Wizards put out a statement, what they referred to as a united statement from our players. And this is a little different, where most sports organizations put out official statements from their PR department, from their ownership, if there were names put on there. Now, the Bulls came from Michael Reinsdorf and his wife, but this is different. The Washington Wizards called this a united statement from our players. And it reads as follows. We will no longer tolerate the assassination of people of color in this country. We will no longer accept the abuse of power from law enforcement. We will no longer accept ineffective government leaders who are tone deaf, lack compassion, or respect for communities of color. We will no longer shut up and dribble. And I think that's wonderful. But how does one demonstrate the lack of tolerance and the lack of acceptance? What then happens? What's the action item here? What is the actual call to action? I love that. And I love how strongly worded that is and how that mentions the real issues here. I would just love to know then what, or now what? I would feel a lot more empowered if I had that sense of now what. So we're working toward that, and we're here for you today. And I mentioned, look, I see your texts, I get the tweets, I get the emails and all that stuff. And I can't promise you that I can strike the perfect tone all the time on this show. And I can't promise you that I'm always going to know exactly the way to handle everything, because it's a sports radio show. But I like to think that over 25 years that you know me well enough that we can be straight with each other. We can be real. And today, and as this continues, and as we learn more, and as we've been through the last couple of nights in and around this city, as we have, as I said at the start of the show, we'll handle this however you want. And if you want to jump in and talk about this and say, Bernstein, you're wrong and you're forgetting something, and this is, you got to look at it this way, I'm open to that. If it's your personal experience, if you want to talk about it, if it's any better understanding of why the city is kind of blowing up around the edges like it did, there's a lot happening right now. That's not even to mention the fact that we're still wearing masks outside because there's a virus in the air that nobody's ever seen before, and no one knows what it does and where it's going to go next. It's also disproportionately hit our communities of color. That's something Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wrote about as well, that we can't look at this out of context with everything that's going on and with every incidence of systemic and generational prejudices that have resulted in certain people being more exposed to a deadly pathogen, or more endangered, I should say, by a deadly pathogen because of lack of access to healthcare, because of mistreatment, because of where people have to live. When you're that close to an airport, or you're that close to heavy industry, because that's where the neighborhood is that you can afford, or the places where you've been funneled based on eminent domain and the construction of interstates. And you read a little bit about Minneapolis. You talk about two Chicagos. When you start reading about Minneapolis-St. Paul and a largely idyllic, large Northern American city and the disparity that they have there, there are two Minneapolis-St. Pauls. And some of that does have to do with the construction of roadways and what areas got destroyed to make room for an interstate, and where people are forced to go, and when the air they have to breathe, their access to fresh food and medical care, what they're charged for insurance, their ability to have access to the same kind of banking. There's a lot going on. And there's a lot of really scared and angry people. And all we can do at the moment is listen and make ourselves more aware. That's what we're trying to do. 312-644-6767. The two sides in the baseball labor negotiation are talking. They're talking really acrimoniously, but they're talking. The fact that they're rejecting each other's proposals is better than not picking up the phone. So the Players Association is countering. The owners are saying no, but most smart people seem to think there is going to be baseball, just as there are some people understanding that basketball might be closer than we think to coming back. So we will talk a little bit of sports and maybe some other things with Fangraphs senior editor Jay Jaffe. He's joining us next on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.